Hey, Massconce. In this rundown, we discuss Massachusetts colleges costing over $90,000 per year, as well as a couple of colleges costing $89,000 per year. You start figuring books and a couple of miscellaneous things, and we're talking $100K per year, folks. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about maybe trade schools. We've also got a special guest, Sean George of Dunmo Consulting, in to talk about the time and cost of permitting in the city of Boston, but it really applies to many places here in Massachusetts. I'm going to put Sean's information in the show notes so you can check out Georgie on social and at his website as well.
Today we're going to have a special guest, Sean George, aka Georgie617 on Twitter and Instagram, so you'll see him pop up here.
Morning.
AKA Georgie. All right, there's Mike. Morning, Mike. We got Regina coming in.
Morning, Red.
Waiting on Georgie.
Morning, guys.
If you guys can chit chat while I request.
I think
Sean,
we can handle that, Mike.
I'm not big on talking, especially in front of people.
You shy?
Yeah. So, Sean joining us this morning? I missed it.
Yes. Sean will be joining us because we're going to talk about permitting. All right, I just sent him an invite. Hopefully you'll see him shortly. He is one of these, he's when I was asking him to join
morning.
Us in
morning.
There we go.
Hey Mike, hey Regina.
Morning.
Hello, how are you?
How are you?
Sean, I was just about to say to them, I was thinking, you know, you have a new baby, and when I was asking you to join at 6:15 in the morning, I thought you were gonna be you know, in a tough spot. But you're like, well, I'm at the gym at 5:00, and I'm like, oh, okay, this guy's fucking around.
I was gonna say, probably hadn't been to bed yet.
Nah, my wife. I told my wife last night, and she was like, "Is this with the lads? At 6:15 in the morning?" And I was like, "No, it's work related." And she was like, "All right, whatever."
So this morning we're going to talk about a few things. What came to interest to me was that there was a couple of institutions that broke the $90,000 a year for college. So I want to talk about college tuition, the options of vocational schools, the other methods to get into the construction industry or any industry, frankly, that isn't going to cause so much debt for people. And then the reason we have John here this morning is I want to talk about cost and time associated with permits. It's a big issue. It continues to grow. Also want to talk about Sean's favorite subject, which is bond, and the new creation of an insurance product, which is a solar bond to pay to take down the solar panels when we're done. And then if we have time, I want to chat a little bit about Home Depot acquiring, you know, commercial grade roofing company for, you know, their largest acquisition yet, and what that means for people in construction, and is Home Depot going to be a major player now, or is that where they're going in the commercial market? So for starters, two colleges here in Massachusetts crossed $90,000 a year. They were Wellesley and Boston University. I believe they were both over, one was just over 90, and Wellesley is over $92,000. We have Brandeis and Olin, both over 89,000. I think you start buying some books and we're quickly at 100K. Now we're talking a 400K loan, which I didn't bother to Google it, but I don't know. What do you think the payback is total on $400,000 loan?
It's crazy. Yeah.
550, well, maybe?
I mean, the interest rates are pretty low on student loans usually. If you're taking, you know, the federal aid. But yeah, I remember when my kids were little saying, sheesh, by the time my kids get to school, it's going to be $100,000 a year for college, thinking I was exaggerating. Yeah. And that's where we are at this point. We're within striking distance of $100,000 a year for college.
Yeah, and frankly, I just get frustrated. There used to be, I think they changed the name, it was a thing called Lambda School, where they allow for an online program where they teach you. It was mostly like computer-based kind of things, but they offered it for free, and then you were pretty much guaranteed a job when you were done, and their payback was a percentage of your salary for the next 5 years, as long as you made at least $80,000 a year. So, great. You know, what is the actual value of what you're providing, and then I'll pay you on that. But there's no transaction here. It's kind of, it's broken in the fact that someone getting a sociology degree is paying the same amount as someone that's going to get, you know,
right,
a law degree or an engineering degree. It just seems, yeah, ridiculous to me. But the question is, does this change people locally? I know Oregon just passed a $76 million, what they call it, it's like a grant or something like that for high schools to bring back vocational programs at high schools. Does this push us to start putting vocational schools back and get people to start looking at trades?
Why not? I mean, that would be, especially with the trends that we're seeing now, I mean, I think that that would be the right move, right? Like,
Yeah, but hasn't it been that way now for 20 years with people saying what happened to vocational schools? And, you know, there's a wait list right now for vocational schools in Massachusetts.
I mean, I think there's the stigma behind the vocational school that people still, you know, you still need, are there enough vocational students, right, at this point? And that's what it is. The schools still need to be maintained. They still need to be able to run the school, right, and pay the teachers and have the curriculum and have the facilities. So therein lies the problem. You have the students that need vocational, but are there enough students that want the vocational schools to support a staff, to support? So I think that's the problem, right? The idea is still there that, you know, you need to go to a non-vocational school to get into a good college. But that's where the breakdown is, because the idea is, you know, most kids that are going to a vocational high school more than likely are going to go into the trades or go out to work after high school. So, you know, I think you still have parents pushing kids to traditional college. Well, I mean, not necessarily traditional college, but going to college rather than going to the trades. And that therein lies, you know, some of the problem is where is the breakdown between the need and the numbers, right? The kids that are going to vocational school.
I think that is flipped, though. That I agree, Mike, that was the case. But now, like, I have a friend personally who lives here in Boston, and because they didn't, what was offered at Norfolk Aggie was not offered in Boston, he was allowed to petition to go there, and it was, like, struggling for him to get into the place. And I know other people that are waitlisted to get into trade school. So I think you're right. There was that stigma. But I think that stigma is gone, and I think students and parents both want it, and we're not offering it. And we see it in our industry right now when we can't hire anybody.
I mean, to your point, I know a few students that go to Essex Aggie on the North Shore, and the first sibling got in, the second sibling was on the wait list, and, you know, so there is a demand. And it's not applicable to Boston students, right? So Boston residents, rather.
Yeah. So those are county based. Those are supported by the county and the towns in the county. So, yeah, you have a narrowed, you know, student base. But those are also not. Now, when we're talking about trade schools, the way I think about trade schools is, you know, where I went to school, like Don Bosco, right? So you have your academics, and then you have, you know, with the academics, you have the trade part, whether it's electricity, whether it's building technology, whether it's woodworking. You know, the Aggies are a little bit different, where they offer a lot, you know, a lot different programming. You know, they offer farming, animal management, things like that. So, yeah, I mean, I think the demand is there. I just think, I mean, I look at every day at spaces and go, look, and you know, Joe, you asked me, you know, was it some crazy ideas? And the first thing I said was, open a vocational school. Let's, you know, open a school in the city for people who want to go to school and go into the trades, right? There's definitely a demand. It's just who's going to do it, right? And how are they going to do it? So if the demand is there, I mean, let's go, let's do it. Four of us here right now, we're gonna get rolling and start a Volk school. That's the way I would approach it.
It's gonna cost a lot in permits, though, right?
Yeah.
But the thing is, that's troubling. Right. We were doing it, and we did away with it, at least at one point in this state and in this country. Now, for people that are interested, you know, I think there's a different. What you mentioned, Mike, was, you know, that might be more of a skills-based training plus add in some education where you're covering safety and you're covering, you know, codes and getting people licenses and doing plan reading and kind of creating an all-encompassing program. I think that's one thing to help get people in, but I would venture we start earlier. Stephanie made a good point in the comments where she said that, you know, they're having trouble finding instructors at trade schools. You know, she went to a trade school herself. I know her pretty well and speaks really highly of it. You know, she works for Bond now and, you know, she went to a trade school, went the college route and then ended up in construction. But, you know, she has a good knowledge base. If there are people that are looking to point young people, a little plug for AGC of Massachusetts, they have constructingma.org and it's great. It shows all the different programs in construction. It gives opportunity for teachers to find resources for students, for people that want to go into the trades. They have, you know, how much an iron worker makes, how much a painter makes, union versus non-union. And it's a good little website if you're looking for resources and you're interested or someone you know is interested in getting in construction. It's a good place for them to go because you get a lot of those questions like, well, how much will I make? How do I get into the union? What's the difference between union and open shop? So a little plug for that, constructionma.org. And yeah, it's interesting. And you even look at, you know, Harvard's application numbers were way down. Their early enrollment was down 17% this year. Their early admissions applications were down 17%. Their applications in general were down 5%. And, you know, I think eventually you hit a breaking point where it's not worth it. $500,000 is not worth $500,000 worth of debt for the next 30 years.
And then, I mean, if you're going to go on, right, like that's just undergrad. And then think about like some of these students go on to get a master's and, you know, even beyond that. So it's more, it can even add up to, you know, more than $400,000.
Right. Yeah. And the payout is what's important, even if it's at 2%. Over that span, you're talking north of a half
salary to investment.
Easy.
It's not there most of the time. The salary, these people, and I say these people, like they're some sort of, but the people who go the college route, the salary to investment is just not there. I mean,
how do you gain independence afterwards, right? Right. Like, how do you go out on your own? Have an apartment, a car, you know, get around.
Right.
Yeah. And I think, but we going backwards a little bit, but if we don't give anybody a different option when they're in high school,
right,
what are your options? You know, I'm going to go become an electrician. Right. You could hate being a fucking electrician. But if you did something in Volk school and you realize, oh, I love working with animals, or I love working with trees, or I, you know, love, you know, woodworking, or, you know, surveying. Great. You're a leg up. You know where, okay, I'm not going to go to college, but I can do this, or I can go get a certificate and I can start working and have zero debt or get an apprenticeship and learn while I earn. So hopefully, you know, that's my getting on the soapbox and saying, hopefully we reinvest there. It'd be good for us as people, but also it'd be great for our industry. Now, the reason why we have Sean here. No. Sorry, Sean, you ran into
gonna ask you, Joe, do you think social media is driving a lot of kids into trades now?
Yeah. I think it certainly helps. I mean, you know, you look at NS Builders with Nick Schiffer, you look at Kelco with Sean, all the other accounts that are out there. you know, I know of people that have reached out asking for jobs, saying, you know, hey, listen, I'm in Arizona. I'll come work for free for you. I really love what you're doing, that, you know, fine carpentry stuff. I just want to learn it. So, yeah, I mean, hopefully that's some good that comes from social media and encourages people. But again, like, it's great if you're looking at, you know, the work Sean's doing or whatever and saying, that's amazing. You know what? I am going to go take that carpentry class that my high school offers. Right. I had it, you know, called shop, right? And you could do wood and metal. And I took some extras because I found it interesting. And but if we don't have that option for somebody that does see it, to go try it out, then
Joe, I think we're doing them a disservice. Comment about what about offering internships in middle school for additional exposure.
Yeah. And even, here's a great example, Essex, Wendover. I was up teaching a plan reading class at Wendover, and they had three high school students that were doing internships there during the school year. They do, like, I don't know if it was a 1 week on, 1 week off kind of thing. And, you know, sometimes you think of these Vogue schools or whatever, and, you know, they're going to work with a deck builder on, you know, during the week in their town. It's not like that. You know, their Wendover is doing, I don't know how many millions of dollars a year, and they're a very professional organization. And they had three young high school kids that really, frankly, really had their shit together, was sitting in a room full of adults and were able to speak professionally and were learning within the industry. So, yeah, I think, yeah, that's a great, it's a great comment.
Just exposure. You know,
job experience,
exposing, the potential, you know, exposing kids to, you know, now STEM is a big thing in most of the schools, but just exposing them to the industry, what is it, right? Because most kids don't even figure, unless their parents are in it, or relatives or whatnot, they don't find out about it until high school, or even start thinking about it until they're moving towards the end of high school, right? So exposure in middle school is a great idea. Just what is it, right? Hands-on. Nothing better than having kids work hands-on and being able to, you know, to, you know what carpentry is and know what engineering is and know what, you know, those things are early on. The earlier the better at this point.
And it's a life skill. Even if they don't choose it as a career path, it's a life skill. And just having that option, so to Sean's point, when that interest is sparked.
And back to maybe they can go explore Essex. That's where my friend's children go. And she, one of the girls is a senior, and she's done the landscape program. And now her sister's in the landscape program. And they have an incredible program. It's a 1 week shop, 1 week academic. And she's working for a landscape architect right now out of Medford. I forget the name of it. But I mean, they've had like incredible exposure leaving high school. Right. And maybe she'll get into that. Maybe she'll get into the design, or maybe she just will have a beautiful garden at home someday. But they offer both. The campus is beautiful. I mean, you go up there, there's farm animals everywhere. I was like, wow, I didn't even know this existed until literally 4 years ago, right up in Danvers, you know?
Yeah, getting people in nature.
It's put you on the people taking the kids in for the internship, right? Like, you walk into a construction office, there's a million things going on. I feel as if there has to be somebody dedicated to managing that internship program. Because a lot of the time, you know, we've all walked into offices and you just see a kid there doing dog work on a computer. Like, you have to actually get them into doing a certain type of role or being watched by someone that's actually doing something. Not just, oh, you're here for a week, I'm going to hand you 10 spreadsheets, just plug all these numbers in. And then oh, this is construction. This isn't construction.
Yeah.
I'm sitting on a computer all week.
No, it's a good point, because oftentimes that people that bemoan, oh, I can't find anybody, or there's nobody, we've got no trade people. And I say, oh, yeah, you know, do you hire any co-ops? No, we don't really have the capacity. Like, okay, well, you got to contribute, you know. And best thing that Wentworth ever did was I left with four jobs and a ton of experience. And, you know, so we can't bemoan and not do our part. So excellent. All right, on to the money conversation here. Cost and time of permitting. You know, this might become a little Boston-centric. Sean, you had a excellent post where on Twitter where you just outlined, hey, these were my costs just to get a permit. So hadn't put a shovel in the ground, ordered any material, nothing, just straight up cost. And I think it broke 100K.
It was right
about at 100K. Yeah. So talk to us, you know, what type of project was that? Where were the costs? And then all three of us are going to probably fucking cut you off and become something, but go for it.
Yeah, no, it's a small lot in Mattapan. It's 4,500 square feet. It's right in front of the Mattapan commuter rail line. We tied it up and we just wanted to design like it looks like a tree family, Joe, you've seen it. We didn't want to roll into the neighborhood and try and do like, you know, something obnoxious where people were going to throw the pram out at us straight away. So we went very simply with a 4-unit building, looks like a tree family. It's very, very New England, which I love. I love the old school style. But yeah, in terms of tying it up, the money that goes in, not a lot of people realize or see how much money gets tied up before you even swing a hammer or an excavator gets to the site to do whatever. So, you know, we started with obviously doing a negotiation with the owner. It's me and two other guys. We all have W-2s. We're trying to get into it. We could only do a deal like that contingent. You know, we don't have the money to buy something outright. So we had to start with our deposit. So we put $10,000 down for the owner to give us 12 months to go and go through the entitlement process in Boston, which some people would ask you 12 months. And it's like,
right,
that's kind of tight. That's kind of tight at the same time. But yeah, we put $10,000 down for the deposit. That then gave us the ability to go and get our zoning set together so we could submit the ISD to a plan reviewer, get our rejection letter. Then you get into paying, I think all in, it was like $1,500. That's your nominal fee, which basically is a nominal fee letter. I mean, you guys probably know you're basically off putting the cost of the permit until you get your approval, right? So you're not paying $12,000 or whatever related to the cost. So yeah, we have to do that. Then you're spending, you know, some neighborhoods I wouldn't get, like for me personally, because I've worked in a lot of neighborhoods, I'd probably represent myself. Be like, I feel much more comfortable going into a room where I know everybody rather than sending an attorney in. Because then a lot of times they're human, right? People sitting in the room are like, oh, who's this attorney? Like, he does 100 of these projects a week.
Yeah.
Why is he representing? Whereas like, I see the value, I'm going in myself to talk to Mike and Regina. They know me. They know the product I'm going to bring and what I'm going to build. In this particular case, I didn't know anybody. We decided to go the route of hiring an attorney who does work in that room once a week, and it went really well. I'm going to plug him now. It was Joe Feaster from Dan Torpy. He used to be on the ZBA board. He's a great guy, very knowledgeable, especially for someone like me who, you know, was learning. I'm still learning, right? Everybody's still learning. So it was good to get in a room with him and talk to him. And then we had like our typical architectural fees, survey fees. So I think for a 4-unit project so we started May of 2023. We had our full set ready to submit in August of 2023. We had our rejection letter within a month, which was pretty good. September of 2023 we got it, and then we were done with the neighborhood process come the end of November, and we did ZBA the first week of December 5th 2023, and then we were done with our appeal period late January 2024, and we were carrying it. So yeah, it's like $35,000 for that whole process. That's all at risk.
Right,
you go to the ZBA and you're told no, which is funny. The BPDA now give the recommendations. Have you seen that on the smaller projects?
Right.
Yeah.
That actually sounds quick. Yeah. Like that overall timeline that you just gave. I mean, that sounds like you hit every single mark.
Yeah. To be honest, we did. Yeah, I was very happy with how the timeline went on that. We there wasn't much fat on the bone, thank God. And I think where we did make that up was hiring Joe. That's where the money was well spent, you know. We only had to do two neighborhood meetings. Whereas you hear horror stories where lads are spending 24 months just talking to a neighborhood
group
before they even go to the ZBA. We were very blessed. I'll tie it back to, we did a good process. We stuck to what we were going to do. We didn't tell any lawyers, you know, typical project. They're all for sale. They're all home ownership. It went pretty well. The timeline was good. We're happy out.
Yep. So what was the total? Sorry, go ahead, Reggie.
No, I was going to say 4 units sounds pretty reasonable. You weren't being
aggressive.
I don't know what the neighborhood looks like if it's a 2-unit, you know, single-family neighborhood.
It's a main road that typically has. There's a lot of apartment buildings, but then the main context would be triple deckers. That's why we wanted it to look like a triple decker. But like everything, land costs, construction costs, a triple decker wasn't going to work. We needed that extra unit to make a pencil, to make it worth, make it worthwhile.
So, you were what, before you even put a shovel in the ground, right? Before you moved earth, what were you into this project for?
Yeah, for just the zoning related stuff, it was like $33,000.
And $33,000, and that's an investment, not knowing if you're gonna win.
Yeah,
right? Not knowing if you're gonna come out successful.
That's fully, that's fully spent up to the ZBA date. Yeah.
So then, to permit, before you had your permit in your hand, right? What additional? How much additional did you have?
So we're right now. I'm about to just apply for the permit now in the next week. We're just waiting on one item, and we'll be. I think it's just shy of $85,000.
Yeah.
Without a shovel on the ground yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, for a residential.
Yeah,
right. It's less pretty small residential.
The square footage is less than 5,000 buildable. Not big.
Right.
Yeah, and frankly, I mean, I'm listening to this, and in my mind, I'm saying, okay, at a year, you did this at lightning speed, which that means that's broken to begin with. But this was your first one. And you were writing thousands of dollars out of pocket, rolling the dice. So I'm sure if that was me, I would be sleeping out in front of 1010 Mass Ave trying to get my sign off as soon as possible so I don't lose my money. And so I bet you had to work pretty hard to.
That's not counting how much time we put into it. That $32,000, the $32,000 doesn't count. Yeah,
basically. You working for free, basically.
Yeah, you should be getting paid for it, but you're not because it's your investment, right? You're trying to push it and you're trying to make sure this works. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's all the neighborhood meetings. It's meeting with the architects. I flyered all the neighborhood myself, knocking on doors, meeting neighbors, trying to like put a face to the project. Sitting in ISD where I see Regina every day. Like, that's probably the hardest part. but yeah. No, there's a lot of money involved. It's actually not smart if you sit down and think about it. It's a very enjoyable process. Like, I love it. I fell into it by luck and I'm fully addicted to it.
Right.
It can be very rewarding, but you have to do it, right? Like what you're doing.
Yeah, 100%.
Especially when you're like really involved, hands-on, you're not, it doesn't sound like you're hiring somebody to do absolutely everything.
Yeah. That was funny. On that point, we had our architect was giving us a little bit of shit. I wanted to, because I learned from Patrick Hayden, who Joe knows very well, and the guys at Breck, they're very much control of everything, which is good and a bad thing, but with our architect, I was like, listen, I'm going to go and get the fire alarm design, the sprinkler design. I have my structural guy. I'm going to give you everybody because I can call those guys. I don't want to go pay an architect and sit for 8 months while he goes and prices everything, you know, and gets whatever his guy is doing it. I want to be able to call Mark Creasy, who does the fire alarm, be like, Mark, we need the plans. Can we push this? Yep. Like, let's get it together. So that definitely helped us, and we can do that because we're smaller. I know a lot of the bigger lads can't. There's so many moving parts. But we pulled a lot of the design people in ourselves: fire alarm, sprinkler, structural, the hair stuff.
Now, so far we've been talking about really ISD and BPDA. What about project gets a little bigger? We start talking about CMP plans, your favorite sidewalk deposits. Plans.
And it doesn't even need to be bigger projects, right? Plan. It really just depends on, like, you know, what your setup is, what your laydown area is. It could be a really small.
Yeah, it's very project specific.
Project, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there are projects, depending on the municipality you're in. I mean, bathrooms and kitchens in three family dwellings, some fire prevention offices are asking for 241 plans. So you take this, you know, 3 week, month, a kitchen remodel, a bathroom remodel, you know, and you start tacking on site safety plans. If, you know, you start tacking on 241 plans, it catches up really quick. I mean, I think that, you know, what we're looking at here is the amount of money and paperwork it takes to get these projects off the ground now. And we're kind of concentrating on money here, but the submittals that are required, every submittal has a dollar value with it, right? Whether somebody's producing it for you or you have to pay to submit it, everything that you submit, everything that you need to produce has a dollar value to it. 241 plans, you're paying the company to produce the 241 plan. If it's a site safety plan, you have to now have the site safety plan. You know, the permits themselves, we didn't get into the, Boston's actually not even bad on the permit fee side. Yeah. It's everything else. So you go to the W towns, or you go to a town that I may have worked in previously, $20 per thousand, right?
Don't not bring to mention, up Somerville. Somerville's almost,
are they up to,
they're the highest in the state. They're like 2.8.
Yeah.
They added an additional site safety review fee. I mean,
right.
A shitload of money.
Yeah, and Regina and I were talking about this last night. Think about that. A company does a CM at risk to manage a multi-million dollar project at 3%. So what they get paid to manage a $450 million project, City of Somerville gets
paid.
It's crazy.
Regina, do you know how much ISD brings in a year? It must be over $100 million, I'd imagine, right?
I don't know. Do we used to have that information when we did the code committee?
We may have it soon. Joe Stu again.
Yeah.
Joe Stu's constantly plugging Somerville.
I know. Again. Joe's, they love Somerville.
This way.
Joe Sway, they should wear ski masks. At the,
I think Joe Sway has financed part of the Somerville Building Department. But so, yeah, I mean, the fees are just, it's insane how much you have, you know, how much you have to submit before you actually even get a permit. And then what we didn't talk about is, so you, Sean, right, you're going to throw a scare in you. But so you go through all this process, you get through the zoning board, you get your permit, you get your approval, you go for a permit, and then there may be additional fees, right? So let's say the fire department doesn't agree with the fire alarm system, which is something that we, you know, we've done recently as far as a review. Let's say they don't agree with the use of the occupancy or the fire separations, right? Now what do? You either go back to your architect or you go to, you know, a code consultant, right? Now you're paying. I'm trying to be diplomatic here about it, because I don't believe that every time people need to get me a letter. That's a whole other episode, I think.
I'm joking.
So now you got to pay the code consultant, right, to write you a letter to get the project through. So those are additional fees that pop up. It's the cost of permitting and the cost of doing business is significant. And is it necessary? Right? Is all this necessary? Is there, or should there be, a streamlined approach? Now, I know towns outside of Boston that use this, you know, the red tape, they use to kind of deter or to push away development because they want to slow development down, and they're perfectly fine with the red tape and the time it takes and the process to kind of, you know, deter development or slow development down.
Well, Mike, forgive me for interrupting.
You never have any
that?
Problem interrupting me, oh. Joe. So don't say forgive me.
But yes. Well, forgive me. Be quiet. I want to say something. Yeah. But on that point, and I know this sounds very extremely cynical, but really, in some cases, I don't want to miss this, is sometimes towns like it not only because they can prevent things, but they can
use it
as leverage. Right? So, oh, hey, a constituent needs me as a city councilor to help them because this process is so broken, you know, and then, you know, whether it's, you know, whatever politician can leverage that to help people through the system, and that's a donor for them. And it's frankly, it happens, you know, they use it as leverage. It's a process that they can kind of control and have an inside track on. And, you know, it's unfortunate. So I didn't mean to interrupt, but I just wanted to hit on that sometimes it can even kind of border unethical.
On your point about the phase at the end, that project we just worked on together in Saudi.
Yep.
I won't mention the client, but we priced out that work that would have to be done for that system to be changed. And it was, that project was ready to get a certificate of occupancy. And if we had to go the other route, I think it was just shy of 70 grand. Which is insane.
Right. Well, and then, you know, you have a finished product. You're going to sweep the floors and occupancy, not to mention, and then to add, you know, 30 plus, you know, sprinklers to the structure. You know, yeah, that's another, I mean, I think we could probably do a permitting, you know, conversation that could last the entire hour because there are so many legs to the issues here. And that's, you know, that's one of them. You were, you know, somebody
George
just wrote
in
George for president. you know, another thing is the time with permitting, right? So we're talking about the money that you're handing over, but time is money. So if you have an investment in a project, and luckily, I think you said that you had to put a deposit down and the owner allowed you to, you weren't paying the note on the lot.
Oh,
is that correct?
Yeah. They were basically holding the land. So we put it was $10,000 to basically say, we'll put this at risk. You get to keep this if we don't get our approval.
Right.
But you need to give me 12 months.
Right.
Which, to be honest, that's short money for a project like that. That it was a good deal. But there's a lot bigger deposits out there, like people putting 50 to 100 grand up. That's all. I'm working on a project right now in Saudi, and I think the deposit over 24 months was like 200k.
That's crazy.
That was a small project review. So me spending 32,000 compared to a small project review, which is Article 80, there's 300 grand there you're spending,
right?
And that's not including the deposit.
Yeah.
So you're $500,000 on that particular project before, well, he has his approval now, but that's before he has a permit set or before he takes down a building.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, just to kind of circle back, and what you were talking about earlier, the four units, that doesn't have anything to do with Article 80, small project or large project review, right? So, I mean, you get into that, and it's a whole nother animal.
Different ball game.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you pointed out, Sean, the how that deposit system works. You know, you're just basically saying, hey, hold on to this. And I've seen it in cases on bigger jobs where they're like, okay, if we get four units permitted, we'll give you $500,000 for this. If we get six units permitted, we'll give you 600,000. If we get eight, we'll give you whatever. And then it's a way of offsetting some of that risk, but you're still putting, in your case, $10,000 up that you might spend a year and a bunch of other costs and a bunch of other time. And that just
a lot of smaller guys tie it to the unit count. Like people who are doing 3 to 10 units, they'll usually do like, you know, 100 grand. If they know if they're buying it for 100K a unit, that's typically where they think it'll work out. That's the agreement they have with the owners. It's funny, a lot of the older Irish lads I work with, I ask them, they'll ask me about a project, you know, I'm helping one guy right now, he's hilarious. And I'm like, send me your spreadsheet, I'll have a look at your pro forma. And he's like, what's the pro forma? And I'm like, how do you know if this works or not? And he's like, I'm buying it for 100K. And I'm like, all right, sounds perfect. It's like,
he's done the math in his head.
It's hilarious how like the older, not to be talking about older generations, but the older lads work compared to like the newer generation. Everything is a spreadsheet. If it doesn't work with a spreadsheet, which it is better, like you get into this guy's truck and his numbers is on the back of an Eversource bill that he got 6 months ago. It's hilarious. But
I can't insult him. I write things on the back of envelopes the time, so that's frightening. But so Joseph makes a great point, and we have to pull the plug on this because I'm teaching at 8 o'clock in Wellesley, so I got to fly. Maybe we'll do this again because there's a lot more to cover here. But Joseph makes a great point. We're talking about trying to build more affordable housing. You know, how is this allowing us to build affordable housing?
Right.
It's not. It's just making it worse. Because if it's 100K in a year, just throwing round numbers at it to put a four family up, you know, how do you make that?
No, and then you add codes on top, not to keep going down the code. So this is just the value of submitting the permit. You got to get there, the codes and what it's going to cost you to, you know, actually build the structure, you know, the codes and the effect on. And now we're just hearing, not to go too far off, but they're saying the National Association of Home Builders says because of the port being closed in Baltimore, the cost of lumber, because they're a main port for lumber, they're saying that that's going to significantly increase in the next, I forget what the timeline was, but I mean, it's expensive. It's extremely expensive to build.
All right. I think, Joe, you're leaving us. Just, so on that note.
Getting up. He's out of here.
Same time, same place next week. Sean, thank you
Irish,
for joining
the
us.
The Irish goodbye. Thanks, Sean.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Joe. Right. Yeah. Thanks.
Sean, you'll be back.
All right.
Have a good one.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye. I appreciate it.